Second Kings, I said Second Kings, right? Second Kings 15. Let's just jump right in. The 27th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, began Azariah, the son of Amaziah, king of Judah, to reign. 16 years old was he when he began to reign. He reigned 52 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Jechaliah of Jerusalem. So we have a king. He had a 52-year reign. Does anyone know the longest reign king of the northern of the southern kingdom? You know him by a different name, but it's the same guy. That's the problem. Why do they have two names? I don't know, right? Ask Matthew Levi why he has two names. I don't know. And there's always confusion when you run into like the names of the apostles in the New Testament. It's never the same list. And you say, okay, what's going on? Can't they get their facts straight? Yes, they're just using different names. That's the long and short of it. Sometimes the shortened form, you'll have like, you know, Silvanus, in who is really Silas. You know, Timotheus, who is Timothy. And well, but sometimes it's only that. Sometimes the whole different, and you know, we have Johanan, and he's all, there's just different names for the same guy. Anyway, this Amaziah, Azariah, you know him better as Uzziah, okay? And he's called both. Why is he of two names? Again, I don't know. He was 16 years old. He reigned 52 years. In Isaiah chapter 6, in the year the king Uzziah died, I saw the Lord high and lifted up. That was the death of this good and godly king. He did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his father Amaziah had done, save that the high places were not removed, the people sacrificed and burnt incense still on the high places. And the Lord smote the king so that he was a leper. Now, we don't read here why, but I'll fill it in. I think it's a story that we all know. He went into the temple to offer incense. And the priest said, "Ho, I don't know what you think you're doing here. This is our, you're trespassing. You're not supposed to be here. This doesn't pertain to you." And he was very angry with them. And he was, you know, calling them out. And, you know, "I'm the king. I don't know who you think you are." You know, they're having this little battle over. And suddenly he broke out leprosy on his forehead. And I would bet at that point he couldn't get out of there fast enough. God casting the deciding vote. Yeah, the priests are right. It doesn't pertain to you. We have a separation in America of, you know, the civil authorities and religion. It goes way back to this story. And probably beyond that. And the Lord smote the king so that he was a leper unto the day of his death. Now, it doesn't forbid rulers, leaders, presidents, et al., to be godly men. It just forbids their intrusion into an office that does not pertain to them. I said before, you know, the governess of our fair state, she has authority to close businesses and things like that. I don't think it's, you know, during pandemic times, I don't think that's wise or healthy or good policy, but it's her, she has the ability to do that. Close my church over my dead body, never again. And I always say this, look, I've never been down the road of a pandemic before. I get one free get out of jail card. A lot of us close churches. They were talking about flattening the curve. Oh, it's just for a few weeks, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we thought we were being helpful and godly and good. We didn't realize they were just taking us for a ride, and it was a power play to show who was boss. Again, when I read a story like this, I realize that, you know, you're not, your government, you're good. Don't speed on the way here. They have rules on the road, and that's fine. That's their job. But once we, don't tell us how to worship. Don't tell us how we're supposed to have the, take every other row of seats out or petition or don't sing, just hum or just butt out of our business, okay? It doesn't pertain to you. That's why he was smote with leprosy. The Lord smote the king so that he was a leper unto the day of his death. What he did, intruding in the priest's office, was worthy of death. Well, he got death. He just got it slow. It was a death sentence. Leprosy always was, except Miriam and I can't come up with his name, the Syrian general who went to Elisha and got cured. And Gehazi went after him and all that. You remember that. We talked about that, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 weeks ago. But the Lord smote the king so that he was a leper unto the day of his death. He dwelt in a several house, it means separate house. And Jotham, the king's son, was over the house judging the people of the land. So they appoint Jotham, his son. He's still alive, so he's kind of as a co-regency. And also, that'd be a good thing if your dad can break you into the job. You have to wait till he tips over and then just inherit. But you'd be able to see, you know, before. But he was still right there to help out for some time. And the rest of the acts of Azariah and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah? So Azariah slept with his fathers, and they buried him with his fathers in the city of David. And Jotham, his son, reigned in his stead. Now, we're going to go up in the 38th year of Azariah, king of Judah, did Zechariah, this isn't the prophet, this is the king, Zechariah, the son of Jeroboam, reign over Israel in Samaria. 6 months, okay? Long, long reign. We got a guy reigning 52 years, we got a guy reigning 6 months. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, as his fathers had done. He departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel a sin. Okay, Jeroboam was a bad guy. We've read that. How come this Nebat, we don't know him, how come his name's always dragged through the mud? Hey, that's the way it is, for better or for worse. And I have said before, if your children are godly men or if they're reprobate, it's probably less a reflection on you and more a reflection on them, okay? And but for better or for worse, you know, I don't like, you know, if you know my son Micah and you know who his dad is, I'm happy about that. If you know my other son, you know whose dad is, I'm not quite as happy about that. It's the way it works. Should it work that way? It does work that way. And they always mention who the parent is. So this guy, Zechariah, he again, 6 months, and Shalom, verse 10, the son of Jabesh, conspired against him and smote him before the people. Okay, this is in broad daylight, kind of like a, you know, Dealey Plaza kind of thing. He's not like Grassy Knoll or sixth floor depository or from a sewer or anything like that. He's right out in the open. This guy's so hated, it's like, yeah, we're going to kill him, and that's all there is to it. And so he does it, like I say, again, right out in plain. He conspired against him and smote him before the people and slew him and reigned in his stead. No secrecy. And again, how do we get to be king? Oh, you just kill the king who's there right now, and then I just step into his place. That's never the way God had intended it. Whether this man is wicked or whether he's good, we've covered this, and we've covered it several times now. God ordered Jehu to kill Ahab and his whole house. God ordered that, but he didn't order any other, okay, this guy's wicked, I want you to go and conspire against him. Apparently, when you're wicked, sometimes it's like so wicked that the people are groaning under, like, oh, are you kidding me right now? And so when he's, you know, it's like, hey, we're not even looking into, look, go ahead and kill him. We'll look the other way. We're not even looking into this, no inquest, no inquiry, no grand jury. Go ahead and take him out. And it looks like this is the case that we have here. And the rest of the acts of Zechariah, behold, they are written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. This was the word of the Lord which he spake unto Jehu, saying, thy son shall sit on the throne of Israel unto the fourth generation. So it came to pass. So Zechariah is the last of that line. So now we have Shalom. Shallum the son of Jabesh began to reign in the 39th year of Uzziah, king of Judah. See, they just changed the name right in the middle of the story without even telling us what happened. So you got to be, you know, sometimes you have to do a little study and you have to, and if you like bounce, you know, Chronicles off when you're reading through this. But if you're just reading through, you're saying, Uzziah, the king of Judah, who's that? Unless you're paying attention, unless you know about some stuff. Sometimes it's kind of, it's hard, isn't it? God rewards the diligent student. He really does. Why doesn't he make it easy? Life's not easy. Why is trigonometry hard? It's hard because it's hard. I don't know what to say, you know. And of course, if you're this mega genius, you just, you know, do trigonometry and calculus in your head while you're walking down the street. And some people can do that, present company excluded. Oh, by the way, I said something Sunday. I was listening to myself teach. I said present company included. I said, you know, some mealy mouth, if he got beaten, would he still preach the gospel? I said, would you know somebody who was, if he got beat, would he still preach the gospel? And I said, I know a lot of them, present company included. And I listened to it. It sounded like I was talking about me, but I wasn't. Norm Labonte was sitting right where Susan's sitting now, and that's who I was talking about. If Norm got beat, because I don't want you to think I'm sitting here tooting my own horn saying, yeah, beat me, I'm so awesome, I don't even care. I like to think that's the truth, that if I got beaten, it wouldn't slow me down from sharing the gospel. I'd like to think that. I think that's true of Norm, okay? And I'd like to think it's true of me, but I wouldn't be so brazen as to brag about it, especially before the fact. Let God talk about that on the day of reward. So you don't, hopefully it'll never happen, okay? All things being equal, I don't want to get beaten, just so you know. But when I say present company included, present company excluded, I'm talking about doing calculus in your head. Present company excluded, I don't do that. Present company included, that was about Norm. Just so you know, I just wanted to clear that up. Shallum the son of Jabesh began to reign the 39th year of Uzziah, king of Judah, and he reigned a full month in Samaria. So he came to no good end. He took over by conspiracy. He killed the king, he began to reign, and he had a full month. Okay, so a big 30-day reign. For Menahem, the son of Gadai, went up from Tirzah and came to Samaria and smote Shallum, the son of Jabesh, in Samaria and slew him and reigned in his stead. You think, what is this? This is crazy. Nobody's holding power. This is wickedness. This is how it operates. It's a banana republic, isn't it? Some things right now, and you should pray like you've never prayed before for this country. Some things are starting to get ironed out a little bit, hopefully. Some things that we knew all along because we're not dumb are coming to light nationally. I hope that the full truth, let the chips fall where they may, will come to light. And anyone who's implicated on either side of the aisle, that's fine. Pray. I'm not worried about a foreign enemy coming and invading America as much as I'm worried about my own government. And I've been that way most of my life, and I think it's been justified. Obviously so. And like I say, things are coming to light. This is Keystone Cop stuff. This is like Spanky and our gang. This is crazy comic stuff almost. It's not, because people are dying and people are suffering, but wickedness never has a good end. So now we got Menahem. He's reigning. He killed Shallum, who only reigned for a month, who killed Zechariah. You need a scorecard for this stuff. It switches so quickly. But the rest of the northern kings are going to go like this. I think it's like six kings from Jehu's line, Zechariah, and they're all like for a little bit, and then it's off into captivity, okay? And nobody holds power for a long, long time, But years, we'll keep reading. The rest of the acts of Shalom and his conspiracy which he made, behold, they are written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel. Then Menahem smote Tiphsah and all that were therein, and the coast thereof from Tirzah, because they opened not to him. Therefore he smote it, and all the women therein that were with child he ripped up. Okay, he's not a godly and a good guy. His scorecard is not good. In the 39th year of Azariah, 39th year, okay, remember it's a 52-year reign, in the 39th year of Azariah of Judah began Menahem, the son of Gadai, to reign over Israel, and he reigned 10 years in Samaria. So he had a 10-year reign anyway. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. Of course he did. He's a northern kingdom guy. They all did evil. He departed not all his days from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel a sin. And also that ripping up women thing. That's that on a scale of 1 to 10, that's not good. Okay, verse 19. And Pul, the king of Assyria, came against the land, and Menahem gave Pul 1,000 talents of silver, that his hand might be with him to confirm the kingdom in his hand. So he becomes a vassal, and now, okay, this is Assyria entering into the picture. That's the northern kingdom's going to go into Assyrian captivity. At the beginning, Menahem pays Pul, who you would know better historically as Tiglath-Pileser. If you were in history class and not falling asleep, not sitting there praying for death, I liked history. It was one of the few. Okay, calculus, not so much. History, I liked history. Physics, no. History, I liked history. Geography, the math, they were my friend. It depends which one. So he gives Pul 1,000 talents of silver. Okay, let me be reigning here, or, you know, kind of reigning. Here's your payoff, and now he's a vassal king. And Menahem exacted the money of Israel, even of all the mighty men of wealth. Of each man, 50 shekels of silver to give to the king of Assyria. Well, we'll tax the rich, because we can. Amos had pronounced judgment on the rich at this time. The prophets are all overlaid on all this time. You know, if you read the prophets and see what's going on, who's the king at what time, in the books of the prophets, it gives you a lot of... a lot of the wealth was ill-gotten anyway, and so they weren't... Nobody's rushing to their aid. Yeah, tax them into oblivion, which is one of the problems. But that's always, you know. I think, the way I think about taxation, and I really do think this, you know, the government costs money. Well, it costs too much money, and they're trying to scale back, I think, is a good thing. I think anyone with common sense would think it's a good thing. It costs too much money, but it actually does cost money to run a government. We have to have armed services and we have to pay local taxes. When you dial 911, you want the ambulance or the fire service or the rescue people or the police to show up. They have a salary. They don't walk up to your house. They come in these big machines making loud noises. You want that, and it costs money. And I think everyone should pay their fair share. Now, there's some who think, you know, okay, you got more, you should pay more. Well, I don't know that you want to tax our captains of industry, people who've made wealth and given prosperity all around. I don't know that people should be... you're penalized for being good with money. Again, their fair share, that's fine. But somehow there's a class warfare and you're bad because you have more money than me, so therefore you owe me. I don't see that in Scripture. And by the way, God blesses with wealth. Abraham, anyone? David, anyone? You know, God knows how to exalt. And okay, here you're rich, so you're getting taxed into oblivion. 50 shekels of silver, are you kidding me? He gave to the king of Assyria, so the king of Assyria turned back and stayed not there in the land, because he got paid off. Verse 21. And the rest of the acts of Menahem and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel? Menahem slept with his fathers, and Pekahiah, his son, reigned in his stead. Now, not assassination. He actually has a son, and he's there 10 years, and he can actually raise his son up into the place of his, in his stead, in his room. Now, Pekahiah, again, is he a good guy, bad guy? Northern kingdom, we know he's a bad guy. In the 50th year of Azariah, Azariah's only got 2 years left in his reign. In the 50th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Pekahiah, the son of Menahem, began to reign over Israel and Samaria. He reigned 2 years. Okay, we're back to short reigns again. He did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord. He departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. But Pekah, not Pekahiah, okay? See how complicated it can be? Pekah, the son of Remaliah, a captain of his, that's his, like, bodyguard, or in the bodyguard. Think of Secret Service, a captain of his, conspired against him and smote him in Samaria in the place of the king's house with Argob and Aria, and with him 50 men of the Gileadites, and he killed him and reigned in his stead. Again, reigned in his room. Again, just assassination and then step up to the plate. Now I'm the king because I killed the last king. And the rest of the acts of Pekahiah and all that he did, behold, they are written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. So we see a 2-year reign, not much except that he was assassinated. In the 250th year of Azariah, the king of Judah, Pekah, the son of Remaliah, began to reign over Israel in Samaria, and he reigned 20 years, okay? His dad wasn't a king. He got there by assassination, but he's a 20-year king. He did that which was evil, yawn, in the sight of the Lord. He departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel a sin. In the days of Pekah, king of Israel, came Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria. This is the same pull from verse 19. And took Ijon and Abel-Beth-Maacah and Genoa and Kadesh and Hazor and Gilead and Galilee, all the land of Naphtali, and carried them captive to Assyria. This leaves the northern kingdom about 30 by 40 miles. It's not a big kingdom anymore. Everything west of the east of the Jordan, Reuben, Gad, half the tribe of Manasseh, they're all gone. Here we also see all the land of Naphtali. It's all gone. So is he late with his payments? He just said, "Yeah, I'm the big, you know, gorilla on the block. What are you going to do? I need more land." Or what happened? We're not told. When we know that, Pekah say, "Oh, I'm tired of paying. I'm not paying anymore." We don't. This is what we got. And Hoshea, the son of Elah, made a conspiracy against Pekah, the son of Remaliah, and smote him, and slew him, and reigned in the stead in his stead in the 20th year of Jotham, the son of Uzziah. And the rest of the acts of Pekah and all that he did, behold, they are written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. In the second year of Pekah, the son of Remaliah, the king of Israel, began Jotham, the son of Uzziah, the king of Judah, to reign. 25 years old was he when he began to reign. He reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Jerusha, the daughter of Zadok. He did that which was right in the sight of the Lord. He did according to all that his father Uzziah had done. Howbeit, the high places were not removed. The people sacrificed and burned incense still in the high places. He built the higher gate of the house of the Lord. Now the rest of the acts of Jotham and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah? In those days the Lord began to send against Judah Rezin, the king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, so the northern kingdom confederate with Syria, not to be confused with Assyria, different place. Assyria, think Turkey, Iraq, but Syria, think Syria, think Damascus, okay? So God allows Judah to be struck by this Syria-Pekah alliance. Jotham slept with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David. his father, and Ahaz's son reigned in his stead. Do you know anything about Ahaz before we jump into 16? Good guy, bad guy? Bad guy. Baddest. Baddest, if you ask me. Even Manasseh had, Manasseh was bad news. At the end of his life, he turned to the Lord, and he had a bad report card that ended up, you know, God forgave him. God worked in his life. Dismal. Dismal failure. Not even close. Okay, chapter 16. In the 17th year of Pekah, the son of Remaliah, Ahaz, the son of Jotham, king of Judah, began to reign. 20 years old was Ahaz when he began to reign. He reigned 16 years in Jerusalem and did not that which was right in the sight of the Lord his God, like David his father. There's his scorecard. He didn't do that which was right. He did things that were very wrong. He had a godly father. Again, you know, we talked about Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. Was Nebat a good guy? Well, you don't even know. We just know he had a scoundrel of a son. But I tell you this, Ahaz, he had a godly father who had a good scorecard his whole life. And here he is, a scoundrel. You know, Ezekiel talks about this, and I talked about this when I was teaching the book of Ezekiel. You know, if a godly man has a bad son, you don't hold the father responsible for the sins of the son. That son can go ahead and have a godly, that irresponsible, no good son can go have a godly offspring, and he's not responsible for the sins of his father. The righteousness isn't passed down. The guilt isn't passed down. And we see this in these lines of the kings actually happen. You know, you got Hezekiah, who has what? Manasseh, who has another ne'er-do-well in between, who has Josiah. It actually goes, you know, bad, good, bad, very bad, bad, good, bad, good. It actually does that. And don't like, well, because God was addressing, the fathers have eaten sour grapes, now the children's teeth are set on edge. I can't help it the way I am. Look at my dad. Stop. It's not allowable. It's not a real, no. I was trying to encourage, and I'm not in a cavalier way. It's not that I'm not concerned. You had a horrific upbringing from a dad who was absent, or who you wish was absent, he was so bad. Dad was a good guy. You know, my dad was a good guy. But that doesn't mean, like, I haven't seen a bad... But people have had really seriously bad dads, and they came out godly. And I think this is one of the things that we have to, you know, we take responsibility for our own spiritual... It's not that bad things didn't happen. They did. There's no denying, and that's lamentable, and that's not, but I'm not going to let it, my grandfather was a drunk, and he got me drunk that time. I can't stop drinking. He shouldn't have introduced me to Budweiser at such a young age. That scoundrel, I wish I could stop, And I don't say that because I don't care. I'm saying that because I do care. Here we have Ahaz, all right? A godly father, and he's a miserable king. He did not that which was right in the sight of the Lord his God, like David his father, but he walked in the way of the kings of Israel, yea, and made his son to pass through the fire according to the abominations of the heathen. I couldn't have got that right. Let me try that again. But he walked in the ways of the kings of Israel, yea, and made his son to pass through the fire according to the abominations of the heathen. I get it right? My goodness. What's the thought process say? He's a prince. Your son is a prince. He's going to inherit. I think I'll go ahead and offer him to Chemosh, which is the Molech. I think there's two different names for the same deity, which is really a demon. What was the thought process there? He did that according to the abomination of the heathen, whom the Lord cast out from before the children of Israel. And he sacrificed and burnt incense in the high places and on the hill and under every green tree. Then Rezin, king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, we ran into them, king of Israel, came up to Jerusalem to war, and they besieged Ahaz but could not overcome him. This is chronicled in Isaiah chapter 7. Do you remember it? It's on your Christmas cards. Okay, let's quick, because we got a ways to go here. But I want to show you how this, this is overlaid against some of the prophets and things of this nature. Isaiah chapter 7. Oh, I'm in 6. All right, that's why I couldn't find it. Yeah, it's all chronicled in the first few verses there. And moreover, verse 10, the Lord spake unto Ahaz, saying, through Isaiah. Isaiah goes to him, and so Isaiah says this, through the Lord is speaking to Ahaz, and this is what Isaiah says, ask thee a sign of the Lord thy God. Ask it either in the depth or in the height above. Ask anything you want. Carte blanche. You want it to rain oobleck? Just ask. You want the sky to turn yellow with green polka dots? Do you want gold to start growing like flowers? Whatever you want, just ask. God is saying to him, I'm going to deliver you from, in verse, he calls them firebrands, Rezin and Syria, the son of Remaliah, and Pekah there, right? He says, I'm going to deliver you. Oh, in verse, they're both there in verse 1. Rezin, the king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, went up to Jerusalem, war against it. Okay, and God said, I'm going to deliver this out of your hand. He said, go ahead and ask a sign. Anything you want, this is how you're going to know that I'm going to work out this. So he says, this wicked king, ask any sign you want. But Ahaz said, I will not ask, neither will I tempt the Lord. You sanctimonious heathen dog, you. Is he real? Oh, no, I don't want to test God. No, he doesn't want to hear it. Because he's got his own plan, and he doesn't want to hear what God has to say about it. What happens if God comes through and delivers me? Well, I'm obviously worshiping the wrong God. Oh no, I don't want to tempt God. It's a lie. He don't want to hear from God is what. And he said, hear ye now, O house of David. Is it a small thing for you to weary men, but will you weary my God also? That's God's remarks to this horrible man, Ahaziah. Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to give you a sign, is what he says. Therefore, the Lord himself shall give you a sign. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son and call his name Emmanuel. Butter and honey shall he eat, that he may know to refuse the evil and choose the good. For before the child shall know to refuse the evil and choose the good, the land that thou abhorrest shall be forsaken of both her kings. Who? Pekah and Remaliah there, or Mo and Larry, whatever their names are. Now, there's a near and a far here, obviously, because he's making reference to Mary, who birthed the Messiah, who's spoken of all the way back in after Adam and Eve fall. God promises this same, the seed of the woman is going to break the serpent's head. Okay, it's the same virgins, same promise. Now, there's always an argument here. Behold, a virgin shall conceive. Well, the word is alma, and it could mean young lady. And it could be. But, I mean, come on, how brain dead are we? A young lady will conceive? Oh, what kind of sign is that? I mean, really? Obviously, there was a virgin in the day, and I don't know all the particulars, but that because it was, look at it, it had to be historic because the payoff was that the kings would be, the ones that you abhor shall be forsaken of both her kings. The land that you abhor shall be forsaken. So it had to have happened way back then, had to have, to make that part of it come true. You follow me, or am I being obscure? Do I have to explain it more? What do you have a knitted brow about? You shouldn't. Before the child that's gonna that this virgin is going to conceive and bear, we're not talking about Jesus, because Jesus, before the child shall know to refuse the evil and choose the good, it's going to be all over. That land that you hate is going to be forsaken of both her kings. That's not Jesus. This would come hundreds of years after, 400 or 500 years after. Jesus would. But that kingdom, that land was going to spew out those kings, verse 16, way back then. So it had something that Ahab could see as a sign. You understand? And ultimately, the sign is Mary and the virgin conceiving and bearing a son and calling his name Emmanuel. You follow me now? I'll explain it again. I'll explain it 20 times. It had to have been in the past because those... For before the child shall know to refuse the evil and choose the good. We're talking about a child back then, right? We're not talking about Jesus. Before that child shall get to the point where he knows right from wrong, the land that you hate, Syria and the northern kingdom, the land that you hate, shall be forsaken of both her kings. What are both her kings? Rezin, the king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah. Okay, any questions? So it had to have happened back then. Ultimately, the fulfillment, that's why you have it on a Christmas card, because it's speaking of Mary and Jesus. Was that child way back then called Emmanuel, which, by the way, means God with us? Probably. Was there a virgin involved? I don't know how it worked in the Old Testament, that old way, because it can mean, Alma can mean young lady. And here, may mean young lady. Ultimately, when they translated this into Greek, they used the word parthenos, which means virgin, like you and I would think of a virgin. By the way, Alma still means virgin. It can mean young lady, but you know, you went to college? So what's your alma mater? Your virgin mother, right? It still means virgin. Okay, so I wanted to show you that overlaid, this Ahaz, this scoundrel, this ne'er-do-well, I don't want to, because he's got his own plan. At that time, Rezin, king of, okay, verse 4, he sacrificed burnt incense in a high place. We got there, under every green tree. Then Rezin, king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, came up to Jerusalem to war, and they besieged Ahaz, but could not overcome him. Why? Because God was with him, and God had promised in Isaiah chapter 7. And God showed him a sign that he didn't want to see. At that time, Rezin, king of Syria, recovered Elath, to Syria and drave the Jews from Elath, and the Syrians came to Elath and dwelt there unto this day. So there is losses, but they don't take over Damascus. So Ahaz sent messages to Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, because that's why he didn't want to hear what God had to say, because he had his own agenda. There are never those who are so blind as those who will not see. I don't want to hear what God has to say. But he didn't say that. He said, I wouldn't tempt God. And he acted all sanctimonious. He sent to Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria, saying, I am thy servant and thy son. I'm putting myself in vassalhood, is what he's saying. Come up and save me out of the hand of the king of Syria and out of the hand of the king of Israel, which rise up against me. And Ahaz took the silver and gold that was found in the house of the Lord and the treasures of the king's house and sent it for a present to the king of Assyria. Why? God would have done it for free. And the king of Assyria hearkened unto him, for the king of Assyria went up against Damascus and took and carried the people of it captive to Kir and slew Rezin. One of the problems gone away. And King Ahaz went to Damascus to meet Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria. This doesn't happen very often. We have a king, they usually stayed inside the land. He went up to Tiglath-Pileser. Why? Because now he's a vassal, and this is a meet and greet. He went up to meet Tiglath-Pileser, and this is in Damascus. That's Syria, enemy territory. Not anymore. Tiglath-Pileser is the new kid on the block, and he already wiped out Rezin, right? And so we have Ahaz at Damascus and saw an altar that was at Damascus, and King Ahaz sent to Uriah the priest the fashion of the altar and the pattern of it according to all the workmanship thereof. He likes this altar, and he wants a copy of it. The god of this altar is at Damascus. The losing team couldn't fend off Tiglath-Pileser. And Uriah the priest built an altar according to all that King Ahaz had sent from Damascus. So Uriah the priest made it against King Ahaz. Made it against King Ahaz came from Damascus. So he builds this whole thing. And Ahaz hasn't come back from back to Jerusalem yet. And by the way, Uriah is a good guy, according to Isaiah, but he has a bad spell here. You have to tell the king, no, that ain't happening. Just shake your head, king, until that silly idea falls right out of your head. I'm not building an altar to a foreign god. But Uriah did it, and this is almost certainly the same Uriah. And when the king was come from Damascus, the king saw the altar, and the king approached to the altar and offered thereon. So here's the king, he comes, he sees this new, and he loves it. This is why he wouldn't accept the sign from God. His own agenda. He's not going to follow God under any terms whatsoever. I talked to a JW one time who didn't believe in the deity of Jesus Christ. And I said, if I could show you in Scripture absolutely that Jesus Christ is God, would you believe? He said, absolutely not. you seal your own fate. If you can show me that Jesus Christ is not divine in the Bible, that Jesus Christ is absolutely not the Son of God, I will absolutely believe it. Can you do it? No, you can't. But if you could, I'm going to sit here and say, no, I'm going to be wrong regardless. Who does that? Ahaz, my JW friend. I don't care. I've got too much invested in my wrong. I'm never going to come right. You can't make me. What a sad position to take. And this is what we see with Ahaz. So he builds this altar, and then he offered on it, not his son this time, just burnt offerings. He burnt his burnt offering and his meat offering and poured his drink offering and sprinkled the blood of his peace offering upon the altar. And he brought also the brazen altar which was before the Lord from the forefront of the house, from between the altar and the house of the Lord, and put it on the north side of the altar. So now he's messing with stuff that he's not supposed to be messing with. This is the brazen altar that is in the temple. It's not in the temple proper. It's in the courtyard. You come to this as you approach the holy place and the most holy place. It's on the outside. And King Ahaz commanded Uriah the priest, saying, upon the great altar, burn the morning burnt offering and the evening meat offering, and the king's burnt sacrifice and his meat offering, for the burnt offering of all the people of the land and their meat offering and their drink offerings, and sprinkle upon it all the blood of the burnt offering and all the blood of the sacrifice and the brazen altar shall be for me to inquire by. Says who? Says me. I'm the king. And again, Uriah should tell him, king, no. And what's the worst he can do? Kill him. That's all. Thus did Uriah the priest, according to all the king Ahaz commanded. Is this the end of his life and he's just kind of getting a little wobbly? Or is this earlier in his life and he gets strong and becomes a man of God? I don't know. I want to give everyone the benefit of the doubt and give them a good report card. There's no way you can be complicit in this. During the Nuremberg trials, how many Nazi officers? Well, I was just following orders. Well, yeah, we get that. And you shouldn't have. You shouldn't have. You know, I read our founding fathers, when you have a despotic system, you don't have to obey. As a matter of fact, the moral person would disobey. And, you read Samuel Adams and ones like that, I think, oh, my goodness, that's a breath of fresh air to me. I don't care if you're the king. I ain't doing it. That's the right word sometimes. And Uriah, he just went right along with it. He did everything that King Ahaz commanded. And if you ask him, I bet he'd say, well, he's the king. You know, what are you going to do? And King Ahaz cut off the borders of the bases and removed the laver from off them and took down the sea from off the brazen oxen that were under it and put it upon a pavement of stones and the covert from the Sabbath that they had built in the house and the king's entry without turned he from the house of the Lord for the king of Assyria. So there was a way the king could enter into the court and it was special to him. Well, he ripped that all down. He ain't having any of that. Now the rest of the acts of Ahaz, which he did, they're not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah. And Ahaz slept with his fathers. Good. Wicked heathen dog. Hey, Adam, how do you really feel? I can't read stuff like this. And it moves me. Who do you think you are? Why are you doing like that? Listen, the reproaches of them that reproach thee fell upon me. Do you take umbrage when God's insulted like that? I'm thinking we're supposed to. Now, we're not supposed to do, let God fight his own battles. I mean, when you're put in a position of authority and you can do something about ungodliness and wickedness, but here in America, you can worship any way you want. But I don't have to like it. And I don't. And when I read something like this, this just makes my blood boil. Ahaz slept with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David. And Hezekiah, his son, reigned in his stead. When we get back to, the rest of this, we're going back up to Hoshea, the son of Elah, and we're going to see Assyria politics into this and everything else. When we get back to Hezekiah, we're going to see that he's a good guy. And the high places are finally going to be removed. You got to have some ray of sunshine in all this mess. So we have some godly kings. We have Uzziah, and we have his son Jotham, was it? And then we have this wicked guy. And then in the north, we have one conspirator and one son of this conspirator and one. It's just a mess. And it's just wickedness upon wickedness upon wickedness. It's all bad. So anyway, there you have it. But it's the northern kingdom's getting taken away, and then of course the southern kingdom will outlast it, but eventually, well, you know the story.